The OTB Podcast Network with Virgin Media. Catch all of the UEFA Champions League and Europa League games live on Virgin Media TV.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
Now, very happy to say we have a man who was banging form pre-lockdown, John Cooney of Ulster in Ireland. John, how you doing?
Not too bad, Joe. Thanks for having me on.
No, we're much obliged. And we're very happy to say as well, it's a busy week. It's a game week, which has been some time coming. I'd say it's almost surreal to think you're going to be at the Aviva on Sunday.
It is. It's actually generally the game weeks are the slightly easier weeks. We've had, pre-season for 2 or 3 months, and they're the kind of the weeks you don't really enjoy it as much because at the end of the week, you've nothing really to look forward to. So it's nice now to get our training done today and probably just do a little bit of our own training tomorrow and then get ready for the game on Sunday. So it's nice to have something to aim for.
What's the routine? When will you go down? Saturday evening or Sunday morning?
It's Sunday morning, I think, due to obviously the whole restrictions and stuff like that. It's just safer to travel up that morning, and I think it's in two separate buses. So there's certain criteria that we have to make sure we stay on top of. And I think we have a couple of rooms in a hotel where we can just relax for a couple of hours before the game. So it's nothing we've never done before. We've played Munster away like that before in Leinster as well. So it should be all right.
What's your preference around game time? I suppose, unfortunately for players, you have to do what the team is doing. Some will love the idea of hotel the night before. Others will love the appeal of their own bed and bus down. Some will like bus down, others won't like. What's your fancy?
Probably, I just don't like getting up really early the day of a game. So I don't think we leave till around 9 o'clock. So it doesn't really bother me that way. As long as I get a couple hours sleep the night before, and that's the main thing. I kind of like the idea of staying at home in my own bed. Cause sometimes it's a bit hard to sleep in a hotel. So I don't mind, to be honest, going Sunday morning.
9 o'clock is early in my world.
I have my plan already. Saturday, I can watch the Leinster-Munster game at home. So I kind of enjoy that.
The situation from Ulster's point of view is pretty straightforward. Two games, obviously Connacht on Sunday, first of all. You need 2 points from the two games for semi-final in the Pro 14. So you can put this thing to bed on Sunday, which would be a very neat and tidy way of doing it.
Yeah, it'd be neat and tidy. It's also off the back of our first game. We want to test ourselves. We want to make sure we hit the ground running because it is straight into the business end after those two games. And we want to put ourselves under pressure to win that first game, that we don't put it in the hands of other people. So it is important that we play well, and we want to play these games at the standard we kind of set before this all happened. So we're really happy with how we're going, and it's important that, as I said just there, that we do play well this week. And obviously there's going to be mistakes, and it's not going to be perfect, but it's a good for us now to put the training we've done the last few weeks into the game and see how it goes.
How do you suspect you'll find the dynamics of the empty stadium?
To be honest, it doesn't. For me personally, I don't think it's going to be much of a difference because we even have a trial game on Saturday, and they're the kind of scenarios and circumstances that you train in each week. So even as a kicker, I'm used to kicking in the wet and wind on a Tuesday or Wednesday when there's nobody there. So it's not too hard visualizing nobody in the crowd. So I'm looking forward. It's going to be a little bit different. Obviously, there's going to be noise played in through the speakers and stuff like that, which will probably trick your brain into thinking there is a crowd. But it's just something different, and it's something we're going to remember down the line.
Can we go back a little bit and just sum up your career briefly to date? Because it's been an incredible journey and not a straightforward one in many ways, to the point now where you're, you know, really in brilliant form and knocking on the door of Irish team starter. In broad terms, coming through in school, I think you went to Gonzaga, I was reading. You didn't go in there as rugby-loving, rugby-playing John Cooney. You were Michael Owen-loving, football-playing John Cooney. And rugby just kind of happened a little bit. This was a relatively late convert.
Yeah. My brother had played a bit of rugby, but going into first year, I'd never played. It didn't really play on my mind much. I love football, and that's what I did every day. We lived in a cul-de-sac. I actually lived beside Kevin McLaughlin, who played for Leinster in Ireland as well. I was number 34 and he was number 35. And we lived in terrace houses. So it was nice to have somebody like him living beside me. And I was following his rugby career. So for me to go to Gonzaga like him and try to kind of follow his footsteps, he was in sixth year at the time and he was playing for Irish 18. So I kind of just started taking up then, but I still have much more of a love for football. But I think in Gonzaga at the time wasn't a great rugby school, and I remember throwing one good pass off my right hand. They put me into scrum half on the A. So off the back of that, I started enjoying it, and it was more just a social aspect of playing with my friends. So I didn't really take rugby seriously until in fifth year I was on the bench because Matt Healy was the year ahead of me and he was a scrum half. So kind of epitomizes my career, having to be patient. And then in sixth year I got sent to Leinster Trials kind of out of the blue. I wasn't, as I said, I wasn't even starter on the senior cup team, and kind of playing myself into a school's team. And off the back of that, I kind of kicked on.
Right. So you didn't go into sixth year guzzling protein shakes and training 7 days a week saying, this is my chance. I have to play for Leinster. This is everything I want.
No, to be honest, it probably wasn't until I was Irish 20s that I even thought of a rugby career. I was studying UCD and stuff like that. And it's not that I really enjoyed rugby, but I'd be honest, I didn't grow up dreaming of being a rugby player, but it's something I enjoyed doing.
I'd imagine you were a pretty handy footballer, but even just based on nothing other than your technique as a goal kicker, I'd say you were a decent footballer as well.
Yeah, well, as I said, I like to practice it every day. I was kind of right winger turned striker, and it's probably underlining the fact that my goal kicking, I didn't start goal kicking until 25, 26, so I think my ability to strike a ball kind of helps me in terms of relaxation while I kick, but also give me that opportunity to kick later on in my career when kind of opportunity knocked on the door with a few injuries in Connacht. And my brother always knew I could kick a rugby ball because I used to find it enjoyable, just the relaxing part of goal kicking. But I never did it with Leinster having so many kickers. And kind of just when I was younger, I used to get too annoyed if I missed. So I think later on with my mentality change, it just gave me an opportunity to add something to my game. And since then, I've loved doing it.
You're at Leinster 2011 to 15. There's a loan spell in there as well. By the time you're 21, Joe Schmidt has given you 16 caps. And that's looking very rosy. That's looking like a nice start. And then things go awry. What happened exactly? I don't think Matt O'Connor arriving helped.
Yeah, no, I don't think it did help, to be honest. And like you said, I was really happy with my career. Seems like a weird one. And my first game for Leinster, I was hauled off at halftime. I had a stinker, and off the back of that, it kind of it could only get better. So it was nice to even get. I don't think I got two or three more caps that season. But the next season after that, I kicked on and got lucky and got to play in the final of the Heineken Cup and also playing in the Amlin final. So it was nice to get to experience those big occasions and experience a winning mentality of a team. But then with Matt O'Connor coming in, yeah, I think, I don't know, it was a face not fitting the team or what it was, but we just never really clicked, and I don't think he really saw me in his plans. And off the back of that, that's where the loan idea came. But I was actually in Mayo at the time because my mum's from Sligo, so we have a house in Ballinas. So it was quite fitting that when I heard about the loan offer to Connacht, I was actually in Mayo. So off the back of that, then I was actually out with a shoulder surgery. So the whole deal was that I do my recovery and my rehab with Leinster to then go to Connacht at the start of September, which wasn't ideal because I missed all the preseason.
There's obviously plenty of talent of Leinster, be it on Redden or Isaac Boss or Luke McGrath coming through. What was it, do you suspect, looking back about your face, that Matt O'Connor didn't quite like?
I just think he saw the talent of Luke coming through, and he was captain, I think, of the Irish 20s, and he was doing so well. And he just wanted Lukey to come through and get some game time. And I also think I played one game, and I think I hurt my neck or shoulder again, and I was off quite early, and just that was kind of it. I didn't really get another opportunity, and he kind of held that game against me for a while. So the annoying thing is when I did go out on loan and started playing well for Connacht, he was the first person on the phone to me trying to get me, because the terms was that I could come back, and I did come back, and I'm the only player to play the same team 2 weeks in a row. And so I got to come back, and I played the Dragons, both for Leinster, and then the next week for Connacht. So it was quite bizarre coming back into that environment for a week. But it's probably the best training week I ever had at Leinster, because I had no worries. I was trying anything and everything under the sun. So it was nice to be back in the environment where I kind of felt a bit more relaxed. And then off that, yeah, he had offered me a contract to come back, but the terms for me was I didn't want to go back with a coach that didn't trust me to play for him. So that's where I decided to stay on with Connacht.
Okay, I didn't realize that. You've had three shoulder surgeries across this period as well. Are they predominantly when you're at Connacht, or what? Because that seemed like a pretty serious situation. If you're having three shoulder surgeries, then certainly on the outside, everybody is whispering, "This just, you know, we're not sure Cooney's coming back from this."
Yeah, I stupidly realised scrum half shouldn't be defending as much as as they want to. Also, I realised that I shouldn't be going into ruck. So it's been a while since I've hit a ruck since then. But yeah, one was in Leinster and two was in Connacht, and two was in the winning season. So it was against Treviso. I subluxed my left shoulder where it kind of partially dislocates, got surgery on that. That was my second one. And then in the final against Leinster, actually, I came on and well, as I said, I went into ruck, which was not the smartest thing for a scrum half, and came out with a broken shoulder and dislocated shoulder. And because I had already had surgery on that, basically all the surgery fell out of my shoulder. So that took me 6-7 months to come back from. But since then, it's been really good, and I've had no issues. I think I've played 60-70 games since then.
Okay, great. And are you doing anything differently, or did someone twig something, or was it just surgery
did the job? No, it's essentially just bolted into place. So I can't do any like overhead press, or I struggle with like incline press. Anything, my range wouldn't be ideal, but it's basically bolted in place, so I can tackle away, and it feels pretty good.
Right, okay. And are you beeping going through airport security type thing?
Yeah, probably at this stage I nearly would be, because I've broken jaw as well, so that would probably be coming up.
When did the goal kicking start? You said 25, 26. Who planted that seed? Was it something you said to yourself, I'm going to do? How does that come about? I mean, it's one thing messing around in training and enjoying, you know, the sensation of kicking a ball for pleasure. It's another thing doing it professionally for Connacht.
It probably is essentially as raw as what you just said. I used to enjoy doing it, but I'd be the annoying lad who would come out and put the ball down and say to the kickers that, oh, well, sure, that's easy. And I'd get it from the touchline. But I'd actually kicked twice or three times before in AAL just for UCD. And I missed all the easy ones and got the hard ones. But I think Jack Hardy was injured. Shane O'Leary was the only fit out half, I think. So they had no kicking options, and me, Kieran Marmion, and Tiernan O'Halloran all went out to consider ourselves as the kicking options to play Grenoble away.
Yeah.
Tiernan and Marmo both went in with quad strain, so just by dumb luck, I was the last one left. So I was actually kicking quite well, but I didn't even have a routine. I didn't even have a kicking tee, so I got a kicking tee off Conor McKeown, who was actually an ex-Gonzaga boy as well, but he was in the academy, so I just borrowed his kicking tee, which I used for the last like 4 years, and it just suited me. And off the back of that, I came on and had a kick in front of the post to win the game, which was a nervy, it was slightly to the right, and got it. And then the next week they said I can kick again against Treviso. I had three kicks, another one to win the game, got it, but we lost both the first two games, so I was kind of cursing my luck. Just off the back of that, then Pat Lam just said I should be a full-time kicker, and why wouldn't I keep doing it? So,
isn't it funny how life changes sometimes? That's they like exactly. So random.
I know. When Ulster signed me, I wasn't even a goal kicker, so they had signed me just a scrum half, and on the back of that, I had started kicking, and I'd never even played out half before, and after that, I played out half a couple of times as well.
Talk to me about Dervile O'Reilly. I think she's a counsellor you went to see. I don't know, is it around this time you have, by your own admission, a bit of a mindset shift, or you start thinking about the mental side of the game more? I mean, I guess I'm asking all of this in the context of somebody who's struggling to get in at Leinster, who's having the setbacks at Connacht, and who is now where he is. I know it's around this time, somewhere in the midst of all that, that you go and really think about your mental approach to the game.
Yeah, it was both life approach and mental approach. I think I had a bit of, as you said, a paradigm shift in that I realised nothing was going to kind of happen for me, and I had to take control, and I realized that anything I want to do, I could improve on, or I could find a way. And I saw her, and she explained my personality. And I think the better you understand yourself and kind of make yourself a little bit more self-aware, things that I did that I thought maybe I might have done differently or better, I started to realize that, as I said, it was down to me. And
so what was your perception of self that was different maybe to the reality she might have pointed out?
To be black and white, probably if I go back to the Matt O'Connor thing, what could I have done better? So I was always blaming circumstances that, oh, well, he didn't like me and this is how it's turned out for me. But I realized that now if I could go back, I probably would have just gone to him and spoken to him and said, what can I do better? What don't you like? What things that I could have taken into my own hands, which I didn't do. So when people say, do I have regrets? I would say I have regrets that I didn't kind of suck it up and just tried to put my ego or my whatever it is out of the whole confrontation or relationship we had, and just kind of accept what was going on. So that's probably something I've improved on. And myself, it was just continually trying to improve myself. And I think it was being patient as well. So if I look back on, I was always a hard worker, and it's something I always found really easy, and probably to the point that I was overworking. And that's possibly why I did my shoulders a couple of times and picked up a few injuries. But I just have to realize that there has to be more outside of rugby than just always hard working. And it's probably something that I'm just continually driving at the moment, is watching other people. And they say any fool can learn from past experiences, but a wise man learns from the experience of others. And it's just learning from other rugby players, other athletes, other successful people, what they do and what their mantras are. And it's something I've taken into my day-to-day life now, where I've realized I can gain way more from that aspect of it than always just being somebody who works hard.
And was your work with Turvo very much rugby focused, or did you go in there saying, I want to examine my whole life?
Yeah, originally it was examining my whole life. It was issues that I was struggling with, and back then I wasn't dealing with them or whatever, and it comes out where you're emotional or angry, and it was just something I wanted to address myself, and something you see a lot of people struggling with, and now I can't understand why they wouldn't, and I look around and people have the same issues all the time, yet they never address them. So,
and what kind of issues are we talking about, if you mind me asking? I mean, obviously
it was just personal family stuff that I was struggling with, that I kind of wanted to deal with, that I was sick and exhausted of just bearing it or whatever, so I wanted to just deal with it, which then opened up as I said a rabbit hole of psychology and learn about myself, which I just kicked on from then and just got real into psychology and understanding this aspect of rugby and life can make a big difference.
So it's about trying to find someone who can almost show you your own patterns and where you're going wrong and all that kind of stuff. Was it a quick transformation from somebody who maybe blamed others a touch, as opposed to saying, well, Matt O'Connor, what can I do better? Was it a quick transformation from that into the more proactive, more healthy way of going about your business, or did it take a bit of time?
Yeah, it probably was. And it was the whole injury. I was injured at the time as well. And I think that humbled me and gave me that new perspective that how sport is so fickle. And when I look back at that, I was working still incredibly hard. But again, it was like, what can I do better when I come back? And I just remember watching Kobe Bryant, and that probably got me into studying other athletes as well. And just the way he approached life, the way he approached sport, and it just kind of changed the way I thought about it all, and realized that professionalism is so important. And it's probably something that I didn't drive as much early on in my career, looking after your body and watching and tape, making sure you know all the plays, stuff like that, which I probably left down to, oh, well, I have some ability that I can cover that up with. So
yes.
I think from studying him, I learned quite a lot, and he always talked about like lack of skill is a lack of mind, which I thought was great. So you always hear people saying, well, I'm not good at it. So I never understood how you can't become good at things. So I think he kind of helped me a lot through that injury and through understanding myself a lot better.
I know she gave you a line which I thought was great. I only read it today. Train as if. And I thought that was really good. You might explain that. It's I think it's a brilliant one for a sports person.
Yeah, that was another one Dervo told me. So as we generally met more and more, I was getting closer to coming back from injury, and we talked about getting back, and obviously my goal was to play for Ireland, but at the time I was a good bit off that, but in the back of my head I always thought I was good enough. So she came up with the mantra that I train as if. So every session I was doing, I was holding myself accountable to the standards of Ireland, and I could always see myself, if I throw a bad pass, okay, well, that's not good enough to play for Ireland. So it was a really good mentality, and as you said, something I'd recommend to younger players to hold them to. So anytime, and luckily I was training with Kieran Marmon, who was an Irish international, so I was able to get myself against him every day and make sure I trained to his standards, which that mantra did a lot for me in terms of both training off the field and on the field.
With regard to transfers, rugby is always harder to work out than football. I know what happens in football. Someone bids, there's money exchanged, you make the move. Player generally wants to make the move, and it all makes sense all round. Rugby can be trickier. Sometimes it can be IRFU suggesting to a Joey Carberry, it might be better if you go down to Munster. Sometimes a player wants away, sometimes he doesn't. So you from Connacht to Ulster, how does that work? Who initiates that? How does all that happen?
Okay, so the first time I heard about Ruan, I remember I was outside the Huntsman, heard on the radio that he was leaving, and I texted my agent saying, okay, well, that would be a great deal for me if that opens up, because I saw an opportunity for scrum half to go there. But at the time, they were still uncertain about whether he was going to leave and who their options were going to be. But then a couple of weeks when it was clear that I had to leave, they said they'd like to meet me. So when I went to meet them, you might have heard it before, I was driving Toyota Yaris at the time, living the good life. So I kind of went to Dublin to change car to drive to Belfast, and then got a flat tire on the way to Belfast, which is typical. So I ended up being about 5 hours late for my meeting with Les Kiss. But I was adamant that I'd get there because I wanted to meet them. So my best friend picked me up from Castlebelknam, an hour outside Dublin, and drove me up to Belfast to meet Les Kiss. And off the back of that, then the next day they offered me a contract. So I think the fact that I made sure I met them after I said I would, I think they enjoyed that. So
good friend.
Yeah, what a friend. I always, Angus Cody, I always name drop him. So he drove
Angus deserves tickets for life, I think, isn't that?
He does. Don't worry, he gets tickets.
Ballsy enough move, because Ruan Pienaar's status up there was fairly heroic. And he was such a brilliant player and did a whole lot. I mean, that they're big enough shoes to step into. Are you at this stage a pretty confident type and it's let me at it, or were you cognizant that this was, you know, make or break, big move for you?
Yeah, I think I was a little bit naive, to be honest. I knew he was obviously had done such good work up here and he was a complete legend, but I didn't really let it overwhelm me. And looking back, I probably should have, but my mentality was the whole time is just go up, work hard, play as hard as I can for the team and the crowd and the team will take to me. And I'd luckily just got capped for Ireland against Japan. So I went in there with new confidence and I felt good going into the environment and I did work really hard. And that was it. That was kind of just what I thought. I was like, again, as I said, I wasn't even going up as a kicker. I didn't kick at the time, really. Mm. I could do it a bit, but I didn't kick properly. But it was that. It was just work hard and try and play as well as I can.
I mean, it's really worked out. Did you feel instantly at home? Did you find you hit your form instantly there? I mean, but the last two seasons in particular, it's been a joy to watch you, and you really look like you're enjoying your rugby, like you feel in control of your game, like you feel like a, you know, fulcrum of the team in many respects. Why has it worked? What is it about the chemistry up there for you?
Yeah, I think it's been lucky working with someone like Dwayne Peel, who played for the Lions and stuff, and he has high standards for a scrum half. Being a scrum half, you generally find if a coach played your position, they're generally a little bit harder on you. And he wants me to play at my best and he wants me to play quick rugby, which suits me and it suits the way we play. So especially with Dan coming in as well, he drives speed of ball. And for me to want to kick on in my Irish career and kick on with better honours, it's speed of ball. If you can get the ball away quick as a scrum half, it makes everyone around you look better. And as I said, years of work in Connacht and stuff like that on my kicking game came true massively years later, whereas if you asked me 5-6 years ago what would have been one of my main strengths, I probably wouldn't say kicking, whereas now it's probably part of my game that I think is one of my best things.
And pressure kicking at that. I always feel you're going to score that 78th minute penalty, which Ulster need. Do you enjoy those 30, 40 seconds when referee whistle goes and you know you're going to have to make one of those kicks?
Yeah, I do. And it's something I do train. I've read a lot of golf books and I think it's very similar to golf. And even with Dan Soper up here, our skills coach, I treat him not as a caddy, but as part of my team. So I'd always be sending him clips or I'd always be picking his brain. And he really understands me as a kicker. As I said, I'm a little bit different to other kickers in that I don't overthink it and I'm very basic with my technique and I just rely completely on my strike. But under pressure, that means I have nothing to think about and all I have to think about is my breath. And listening to Tiger Woods, he talks, I have a video on YouTube that I nearly watch before every game where he talks about the sanctuary of the pre-shot routine. And that's somehow taken in. I try to relax in that 40 seconds to a minute where I'm about to kick and treat it as a sanctuary rather than a pressure environment.
Mm. And when you say your technique is pretty straightforward, what is your kicking style? There's obviously so many ways you can kick a rugby ball. Your follow through can change, the curvature of the ball can change. There's lots of different ways to get the job done. What's your preferred method?
Just kick the ball over the bar.
You haven't examined it really beyond that? Just give it a kick.
I have examined it, but I find when I examine it too much, I get worse. So
okay.
For me, it's I have to be good on my routine in terms of my steps back, my steps aside, and kicking through the ball. Sometimes I fall off the ball So kicking through is important, but I'm zero primers. I'm not thinking about where I kick on the ball, and I don't think about where my feet go, anything like that, whereas most kickers probably would.
So to extend the golfing analogy, you are not analysing your swing. You don't want to go there. You feel it more than anything.
But that's what I've learned in those, all those golf books say is, I practice it, but in a game, I want to think about it as little as possible, and I don't want to be thinking about where I'm going to hit a ball, because then I'm not really doing what comes naturally to me.
Yes. So would you, like, again, from the golfing thing, kind of is a perfect parallel, you're pulling the trigger. You know, like certain field golfers, and I suspect it applies to kicking, you can tell me, but they'll look at the conditions. I suspect Shane Lowry is like this, a real field player. He'll look at the conditions, he'll sense the wind, he'll look at the whatever the lie of the ball is, and he'll almost adjust his body naturally and feel the shot and see the shot that way. Is that what's going through your mind before a kick?
Yeah, possibly. And as I said, Dan Soper, he understands me. So even the other day, I was trying to way too many technical things and trying different things. And he messaged me after being like, that's not you. You're a field kicker. You're a striker of the ball. So, and he reminded me of my stats and stuff like that. And he's like, you do you, and what works for you is what's best. So to have somebody in my corner that knows that. And I don't mind if he comes on and sometimes he say, well, this statistically in a game, he'd be like, this is your worst kick on paper. And he'd be saying this before I'm made the kick, because he knows the way my mind works is that, well, screw you, I'm going to get this kick. So I like that environment where he can come on and talk to me before a kick, because I don't want to always be, okay, just give me the tee and I'm going to kick this. I like to treat it as us being a team. And I feel if I miss for him as well.
Okay, well, I will look out for that this Sunday. So you and him have a little conversation if he's bringing the tee out.
We haven't kicked, sadly, so maybe. I know, statistically what my worst kick is.
Okay. Sorry, what happens now if when you and Ian Madigan are playing together? Who kicks?
I'm not too sure, to be honest. I think whoever, at the moment, I'd like to think I've done enough to get to kick. But then the line, whoever's the best kicker gets to kick. And it's something people have asked me. And, oh, well, my mom worries. Oh, I hope you get to kick. But I tell her whoever's the best kicker is going to kick. So I tell myself at the standards it's good enough.
And how is that measured in training, as in who's kicking better in training, or will it just be match stats?
I'm sure it'll probably go to match stats, seeing as I said, I'd like to think after last season, I get to kick for the first game. So maybe if I miss all five or how many I get to kick this week, I might get grace for another game. But I'd say if I have a couple of bad games, it might change.
Okay, that's an interesting new dynamic. I mean, I guess you got to respond to pressure, so you got to keep your stats high one way or another. So if you look over, we don't want to have Raj cam and Sexton cam where you're taking a kick and we're cutting to Madigan on the bench.
No, exactly. And we all kick together every week. So we generally do put each other under pressure. And we like to, Mads is big into competitions. After training, made this 4 or 5 kicks. So it keeps us hardwired for games and keeps ourselves under pressure. So it's good to have him around.
When do you suspect you're not going to the World Cup?
Oh, when did I suspect?
Yeah, is it a bolt from the blue? I know there was a missed call from Joe Schmidt on your phone, and that's when you knew. But were you expecting to see that missed call on your phone? Was it a surprise that call happened? Did you think you'd done enough, or did you know from some kind of period out that you were unlikely to go?
I kind of suspected the week before that I might be dropped, because a couple of lads have been dropped, and I was kind of running that team, but I didn't get dropped. So then the fact that I didn't get dropped, I thought I was still in, and then I did get dropped. So it did come of a shock, and thought I was going quite well.
Yeah.
I did find it hard to take the reasons and stuff like that. So
I read that he mentioned your defence to you, and ironically that was one of the things you thought was quite good, which just goes to show it's a game of opinions. There's no point arguing your case, I would think, once that phone call has happened. Decision has been made. What can you say?
Yeah, well, I argued a little bit, and I kind of regret not arguing more in the past. When I wasn't picked years before.
Okay.
Understanding my personality and stuff, I should have just gone with what I believe and said how I felt, and maybe that would have got me further. I kind of just accepted it and just kept my head down. But it wasn't ideal. I didn't really agree with it, but...
And how does arguing your case go in that conversation, the one with Joe?
I just said how I felt. I just thought it wasn't one of my weaknesses, and then also we had played Glasgow in a semi-final, but I played the game with a slight tear in my calf. So I was kind of working at about 80-85%, so I was quite slow in the game and I got caught a few times. But again, I wanted to play the game. Obviously, I didn't want to let down my teammates, but in hindsight, it kind of backfired on me in terms of selection. So,
what do you do when you hang up the phone? Who do you call? What, like that? It's awful news to get, you know. What's your reaction to it?
I was obviously disappointed straight away, and my girlfriend was here, so I had my couple of minutes to myself. But I went up to David Lloyd and I jumped on a watt bike and I did a bit of gym. That's kind of how I dealt with it.
Work it out.
Dan rang me. I was on the watt bike, so I told him I'd bring him the next day and we'd make a plan going forward of what we're going to do.
It can go one of two ways, I suppose, a blow like that. It can fire you up and you come back with a vengeance, or it can really shake your confidence. And it seems like it was the former for you, because 1920 form has been brilliant. You've played with, you know, all the confidence of the previous year and maybe a touch of I'll show everybody as well.
Yeah, I just that summer I'd studied stoicism and the ability to deal with failures and adversity and stuff like that. So I took kind of some of those quotes and realized that it was in my choices with how I reacted to that, and that it was easy for me to just fall off the wagon and feel sorry for myself. But I'd come probably too far at that stage where I just realized I'll go back to an environment that I loved in Ulster and improve myself and try and make them regret the decision to not bring me in, and try and be the best player I could be and have no regrets. So it did work, and I worked really hard that summer. And I think I also got to the point where I'm just going to do what's right for me and essentially screw everyone else. And this is what I'm going to do. And I hope to make the team better and myself better. And it was probably a selfishness in that. But I think it was putting that line in the sand that I wasn't going to appease anyone and just do what I wanted to do.
I throw a quote at you from Dylan Hartley the other day. He was talking to The Telegraph. He's obviously retired, and he was talking about how he feels rugby has treated him. And he says, my generation of players have been crash dummies for a sport in transition from semi-professionalism. It's being reshaped at the moment, subtly but relentlessly, by money men, geopoliticians, talking heads and TV executives. They treat us as warm bodies, human widgets. Players cut the ends off their boots so they can play with broken toes. They gobble painkillers like Smarties. After matches, dressing rooms are like MASH clearinghouses. People are being put back together with stitches and glue. Senior players have bits falling off them. It'd be a wrong to attempt to skirt the unavoidable truth that as players become bigger, faster, stronger, they will be chewed up and spat out quicker. Agree with that? That your sense of your experience?
Jesus, that was a long quote. I kind of lost you about halfway through. I don't really know how to answer that. I do think sometimes people don't understand what's going through rugby people's minds and their bodies. I think it's very rare that rugby players are playing at 100%. We all generally have maybe a sore shoulder or a sore leg. And I think people sometimes forget that off the back of people's performances, that maybe there is an underlying reason that they're not playing as well, or maybe mentally they're not feeling as well. And I think people can, the whole be kind thing, I think it can be used in sport a lot. And I think footballers get it the worst. Even take Raheem Sterling missing the other day. I think they get a lot of heat. And I think people seem to put them in a different bracket than normal people, that it's their job and they're paid a lot to be at that level, but it's just human. They're going to make mistakes, and sometimes I think people forget that.
And with regard to your body and being stitched up and thrown out there game after game, do you feel you're getting adequate rest? Do you feel the schedule allows that? I mean, you could potentially be looking at a straight 12 months in terms of the demands on you.
Yeah, I think I'm a little bit luckier in a way that being a scrum half, that I don't take as many contacts. And I actually felt in the best shape I've ever felt before lockdown.
Right.
Off the back of 13 games, I think I didn't have one niggle, which is very rare. So I didn't really want this to happen, but it did. And I think an onus I've learned is just to really look after my body. And I've learned that if there's something wrong with me, it's not always... Is it something that I always try to look at? What am I doing wrong? Am I moving wrong? Am I not doing enough rehab? Am I doing too much gym? Am I doing too much load? So I think as players, a lot of time we have to look internally and see what we're doing wrong. Which again, like I even read a book last year, Becoming a Supple Leopard, which talks about movement and movement patterns. And generally, when you're doing something wrong, eventually down the line, it's going to catch up with you, and that's where you get injuries a lot.
Well, listen, we've kept you for more than long enough. So Connacht, 4:30, Aviva Stadium. Enjoy that. I'm sure it'll be great to get back out there. And then there's hopefully Pro 14 knockout. There's the small matter of a quarterfinal against Toulouse. You were widely tipped to be playing against Italy before lockdown. So there's Six Nations on the horizon, then a bunch of games in November. So it's going to be a busy time. Hopefully a really exciting time for you. We wish you all the best, John. Thanks so much.
Exactly. No worries. Thank you very much for the good questions.
Rugby on Off the Ball
with Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
The OTB Podcast Network with Virgin Media. Catch all of the UEFA Champions League and Europa League games live on Virgin Media TV.